This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Disclosure, prostate cancer is a spectrum of disease. There should be no demarcations between different grades, and it should be treated as a spectrum of disease. Treatment decisions are based, I say this all the time, are based on three things. One is the cancer itself, and you've heard how you, by imaging, genomics, histology, better define that. Age and health of the patient, how you treat someone who's got a three-year life expectancy because they have a bad heart or lung, totally different than someone who's going to live 35 years. And then very importantly, as there are frequently different treatment options for men, your own personal preferences. I always say that treatment should be based on the most current and detailed information available. Frequently, men don't have that information relayed to them. The number one thing patients will say to you after a year after diagnosis treatment, if they say they would do one thing over again, is don't rush. Is I think Dr. Cooper's idea about that second opinion makes a lot of sense. And for most, as I mentioned, as you'll find out today, for most things, there's more than one option for treatment available. I'm a very busy surgeon, treated thousands of patients with surgery. However, active surveillance is a recommended preferred form of management for low-risk disease, grade group one, and for selected patients with intermediate-risk disease. I'll show you the data on that. UCSF has been a leader. We saw this coming many, many years ago, and we're a leader in the adoption and the validation of active surveillance as a safe option. Unfortunately, still, as Matt mentioned today, many men still undergo unnecessary treatment. Matt and I may talk about this a bit later, but many feel that grade group one disease should not even be called cancer. We'll see more data on this a bit later. Matt and I disagree on this point. This is data at UCSF. So what I'm showing you here is data at UCSF. This is surgical patients over the last 20 years. In blue, we have low risk disease. In red, kind of intermediate risk disease. And in the turquoise, high risk disease. You see that we have gone from treating low-risk disease with surgery 20 years ago to selectively treating men only with high-risk disease currently by surgery. The battle for prostate cancer will be won and lost on high-risk patients. Only about 6% of our patients currently who undergo surgery here at UCSF have low-grade disease. These are usually patients who have large volume, abnormal genomics, or carrying germline mutations. This is different from many centers. Matt mentioned about 40% of patients still in the U.S. who have grade group one disease get treatment. I just saw some updated results. Even that looks like it's gotten a bit better. So what you need to know, this is 10 minutes here. This is what you need to know when you go, you think about making treatment decisions about surveillance. You need an MRI scan. I see too many patients going to biopsy without MR imaging ahead of time. So you need a good quality MRI scan. Your age and health, you know, what's your past medical history, past surgical history? Family history, as Jonathan said, you know, we're looking for germline mutations. You know, you have a strong family history of early onset breast, pancreatic, ovarian, or prostate cancer, especially lethal disease. You should undergo germline testing. It doesn't mean that you can't undergo surveillance if you're carrying a mutation. We have those patients, but we should know about it. PSA density, simple calculation. Take the PSA divided by the gland volume. That gives you a ratio. This is predictive of progression on surveillance. We've seen it over and over again. You want a PSA density below 0.15. The lower, the better. Volume, number of positive biopsies, grade of cancer, histologic subtype. I can tell you that the outcome of care is dependent. When you look at a pathology report, simply, you want to know the volume, you want to know the grade, and histologic subtype. This should be available on all pathology reports. We're trying to get some large community hospitals to integrate this into the pathology reports. And as Cornelia mentioned, histologic subtype. This is driving, volume and histologic subtype are driving the outcomes of men with grade group 2, 3, and 4 cancers. And as Matt mentioned, this CAPRA score, this is, you can go to our website. This was been validated in tens of thousands of patients around the world. Easy to calculate. It is very good. It is know your CAPRA score. Matt showed that. Okay, what to expect? I'm going to show you the most recent data from UCSF. This is 10-year outcomes. Now, this is a table. These are 10-year outcomes for men on surveillance managed here at UCSF. Very few centers can show this. And what I'm showing you here is for men who undergo surveillance for grade group one disease, how many get upgraded to grade group two or higher? Major upgrade, that means when you say I've gone to a grade group three disease or higher, I'll show you that most men who get upgraded, these small, 80% of patients who get upgraded, these are just going from grade group one to two, as small volumes in volume. Very importantly, the risk of metastases, survival, and mortality. So at what to expect at 10 years here at UCSF, about 60% of patients will get upgraded over time. So you fall out 10 years at some point in time, the grade will go higher. The likelihood of a major upgrade is only 17%. So most patients who get upgraded by volume or grade, or rather subtle small changes, about 17% of patients at 10 years will have a more major upgrade. The risk of metastases is 2%, overall survival 98%, prostate cancer specific mortality less than 1%. Active surveillance is safe. We've shown that here at UCSF. Again, these curves here, the higher means the higher likelihood. What drives treatment is not just grade. So if you go to grade group one to two, frequently around the country, that's considered an indication for treatment. But many of these are rather subtle, low in volume, low in risk. So not all the patients who get upgraded here at UCSF go on to treatment. If they have major upgrading to grade group three, you know, primary pattern four or five, these patients tend to get treated. The outcomes are quite good. So I tell patients, if I compare men, I've done a lot of surgery. If I compare men in the past who I treated for grade group one disease, I compare them to men now who get grade group one surveillance and progress, outcomes are the same. So the window of opportunity remains open for a very long period of time. What predicts for progression? Imaging. So you have an MRI scan here. Again, there's the prostate right here. This is the patient's right, left, big tumor here. PSMA PET is going to play an increasingly important role in local staging. So work done here at UCSF shows when you combine, done in here and in Australia, when you combine PSMA PET and MRI, you get better localization of the tumor site and extent. Increasingly, we're using this Katsuhiro Shinohara when they recommend focal therapy. Okay, so these are the predictors of not progressing. The simple table, age. Younger patients actually have a lower rate of upgrading compared to older patients. Totally counterintuitive. So younger patients tend to have more favorable tumors than patients who are older. PSA density, the 0.15, every time we look at it, it's an important predictor, easy to get from looking at your imaging report and your PSA. Volume, okay, low-grade disease, grade group one is generally a low-volume tumor, 85% of these cases are low-volume. The smaller the amount of cancer, the better you do. Grade group two, the outcomes of grade group two is driven by volume and histologic subtype. Those are very important. MRI, a negative MRI, or PI-RADS 1 through 3. Again, the PI-RADS scores are 1 through 5. So PI-RADS 1, 2, and 3 are different, predict for a lower rate of progression than men with high PI-RADS scores. Genomic testing, Jonathan touched on this. We have several commercial assays. More favorable scores tend to predict for not upgrading. And a simple negative biopsy. So if you want to go on serial biopsies over time, if you've had a negative biopsy, you were diagnosed, and another biopsy negative, and about 20% of the time this will happen. So for men with the diagnosed cancers on surveillance, we'll get another biopsy, about 20% of the time it'll be negative. Again, that predicts obviously for non-progression. Details, again, I wanna show this issue. At one time they thought that all high volume pattern grade group one disease need to be treated. We've shown that volume predicts for progression but does not predict for outcome after surgery. So even men with high volume, low grade tumors may be good candidates for surveillance. Younger patients, this is work done at UCSF, that actually younger patients have a lower rate of progression compared to older patients. I see a lot of young men diagnosed there just by almost accident in their 40s who have not completed their families. So these men actually are very good candidates for surveillance. So young patients actually do better in surveillance compared to older patients. Totally counterintuitive. Black men, controversies about this, because obviously in our active surveillance series, we have a lower proportion of Black patients than in fact the overall cohorts. So there we're a little bit more cautious, but work at UCSF suggests that you should not make a treatment decision based on ethnicity alone. What about grade group two cancers? So again, the higher is the better. So it turns out in this lower panel that the upgrading rates for a grade group two are higher than grade group one, but many grade group two tumors on surveillance do very well. So again, what does well are lower volume, favorable histologic subtype patients. Histologic subtype, I can't impress how important this is. Cornelli gave a great talk on this, but this is driving outcome. So again, large cribriform intraductal cancers have more worse outcomes. The other thing is that it turns out that the adverse histologic subtype correlates with gene expression profiling 80% of the time. So again, I try and get this in all our patients. We've had patients from other systems, and I encourage those pathologists to incorporate histologic subtyping into their assessments. And if they don't know how to do it, they should come to talk to Cornelli to learn how to do it. New biomarkers, this was touched on recently. We have a big interest in AI, and I can tell you work led by Cornelia suggested actually just taking the biopsy sample, we have an algorithm that reads that biopsy, can predict the outcome. You don't need a fancy genomic test to do this. This is what I call democratizing oncology. You make a diagnosis of cancer around the world on biopsy. We think you can take a picture of that biopsy, upload it to cloud, send to an expert pathologist, and using an IR algorithm, predict outcomes. And she has shown this in at least two cohorts. And I think I borrowed this slide. I think I borrowed this from you, Matt, this slide here. Maybe not. Maybe yours may have been better, but it turns out now for what we want to do is make active surveillance less burdensome, less intensive. So you can do that by risk profiling. So the patient on a treatment or a fusion biopsy, you know, high volume cancers, grade group two or higher, high genomics, pyrites four or five, cribriform volume. These patients, I'm not saying these patients are not candidates for active surveillance, but these are the patients who are going to need an early confirmatory biopsy. Different from a patient who's got favorable PSA density, negative biopsies, favorable genomics, MRI. These patients, we've actually decreased substantially the number of biopsies. And we think we will be able to characterize a group of patients who at the onset, we can say, you need no further follow-up. I mean, we have the data sources to start to ask these questions, but we may be able to predict for indolent tumors. We rarely see in the out years, and we've demonstrated this, a biological shift. So we have seen a few patients who have low risk, and then we see this rapid onset of a higher risk cancer. That occurs in 1-2% of cases. And we think we can predict it. Again, who may need no follow-up? We think we can get to that. So I tell people active surveillance is about timing of treatment. Okay, as I've already showed you, about one-third of men with grade group one disease, about 50% with grade group two will require treatment. Again, some men may never need treatment, but even those that do undergo treatment at the time of progression, you save them the morbidity and expense of treatment. So if you can take a 50-year-old man, you can say, gee, you can go on surveillance, and in 10 years, if you progress, we can treat you for cure. That man is still benefited by a delay in treatment. And our outcomes, as I showed you, are excellent. So I think active surveillance is a preferred form of treatment for really most all grade group one tumors. And I think some men with higher grade tumors, even grade group three, may be candidates based on volume, histologic subtype, and genomics and imaging. I've shown you that long-term outcomes support a safety. And I think the use of advanced imaging, better cancer assessment, make it safer and less burdensome to patients. I want to thank, you know, it takes a team of people here. And I also want to thank, actually, we have great support from radiation oncology and medical oncology for active surveillance program. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.